Welcome to the Shirim Gurarye, Parshas Toldos. The pieces of the Gurarye I wanted to look at tonight touch on an issue which the Gurarye himself, the Maral himself, speaks about at length. It's also spoken about by numerous Mefarshim on the Chumash, and goes back ultimately to a Mishnah. And much of what we're going to quote tonight is actually not from the Maharal and Parshas Toldos, but rather from the Maharal and Parshas Vayigash. But in Toldos, he references the Arichos, the long discussion he has in Vayigash, and it seems like an opportune time to jump into it so we can get a little bit of taste of things to come. The very end of the first Aliyah of Toldos, so the Ribbono Shel Olam appears to Yitzchak, and he comments, among other things, that Shama Avram Bekoli, this is Pasuk Perek Chavav, Pasuk Hey, Shama Avram Bekoli, Avram hearkened to my voice, he listened to my commandments, Yishmar Mishmarti Mitzvosai Chukosai Vesorosai, and indeed Avram Avinu guarded my ordinances, and he kept my mitzvos, my chukim, and my toros. What does that mean exactly? Right. So again, the simplest explanation is whatever I thought Avraham Avinu to do, he did. But Rashi quotes from a Mishnah at the end of Kiddushin, a very, very famous statement of Chazal. Hayishmar Mishmarti. What does it mean that Avraham Avinu kept the Mishneres, that he kept the ordinances, the fences of the Ribbono Shel Olam, means Gzeros Laharchoka Alatoros Shibatora. Avraham Avinu kept the various rabbinic decrees that were going to be put in place later on in history in order to protect the Torah's laws. That's Mishneres. Mishneres means a fence, that which is meant to protect something else. Kigon Shnios La'arayus Hashvus L'Shabbos. In other words, Avraham Avinu kept even the rabbinic laws as they pertain to various different types of incestuous relationships. He kept even the rabbinic laws when it comes to Shabbos. And going on, Rashi says, Mitzvosai, Avraham Avinu also kept the mitzvot. Dvarim she'ilo anichtavu ru'in heim l'savos kigon gezel l'shvichu salmim. Mitzvos in this context refers to what some of the other Rishonim call mitzvah sichlios, rational laws, laws that we would have figured out based on our own rationality. Don't steal, don't kill people. Chukosai, the Pasuk says that Avraham Avinu kept the chukim. So here Rashi says, Dvarim she'etzah harav u'mos ha'olam meshivim aleihem. Chukim refers to things which on the surface are irrational, things that the nations of the world and the Yetzer Hara tell us these don't make any sense. Kikor achilas chazir, levishas shatnez, not eating pork, not wearing shatnez. Shein tam b'davar el gazar hamel fukosav al avodav. There's no obvious reason. I'm sticking to the word obvious. Rashi doesn't say the word obvious. Shein tam l'davar, literally Rashi says, there is no reason behind these mitzvahs, but rather they're just decrees from the king. This toros, sorry, and furthermore, Avraham Avinu kept my toros, which means that Avraham Avinu kept not only those things which are in the Torah Shebikrav, the written Torah, but he also kept things which are in the Torah Shebal Peh, things that would be passed down, revealed orally to Moshe Rabbeinu at Har Sinai, and then passed down to the successive generations. In other words, basically, bottom line, Avraham Avinu kept the entire Torah. That's the mission at the end of the Sechot Kiddushin. And Rashi, by going through the four different categories of Torah that are mentioned in the Pasuk, Mishmarti, Mitzvosai, Chukosai, Mitzvorosai, delineates Avraham Avinu kept the Rabbanon, rational mitzvos, chukim, and things that are halacha l'mashe v'sinai are part of the Torah Shebaal Peh. That's Rashi, again, famously quoted from Chazal, elucidates the Pasuk in that fashion. A number of comments from the Maharal. I want to start with one which is relatively short, but it's a very, very beautiful, fascinating comment. The Maral in Gurayi starts off by asking the following kasha. Okay, accepted. Avraham Avinu kept the entire Torah. So if you and I were asked to convey that Avraham Avinu kept the entire Torah, the order in which we would list off the various components of the Torah that he kept would probably start with, I don't know, the rational mitzvos. Certainly we start with the Daraisas, the Torah laws. the very first component of Torah which is described in this pasuk is mishmati, those gzeirah, right? The rabbinic decrees that are meant to protect the Torah laws. I don't get it. Why are we talking about decrees? We haven't even established that Avraham Avinu kept our ISIS. In other words, you're telling me, to put it somewhat jokingly, but I mean, that's, you're telling me Avraham Avinu was makpid to wait 6 hours between eating meat and eating milk, but you haven't yet told me that he wouldn't eat pork. Right? In other words, if we just would have stopped the closing call, he's from Ishmael, I know that he waits 6 hours. A rabbinic ordinance, a decree from the rabbis. I know that he waits 6 hours between meat and milk, but if I would have stopped the pasuk there, I wouldn't know that he refrained from eating, things that are prohibited to eat from the Torah, right? Okay, maybe, but then if it's a kal v'chomer, so then I don't need the latter part of the pasuk. Right? Just stop there. But Yishma Mishkarti. It's a strange way to convey that Avraham Avinu kept the entire Torah. So writes the Maral, Afal Gav Shiloshik Shizeh Shiloka Seder Ha'inyam Rizkar Ha'achokos Kodam HaMitzvahs. It's not conceptually hard to understand why you would put the decrees before the actual mitzvahs. So Shaharachokos Kodam HaMitzvahs Lefi HaSagas Ha'adam. The reason the Torah writes it in this way is that in terms of our ability to understand, it's easier for us to understand a rabbinic law than it is for us to understand a Torah law. Ulechach nichtavu batara kodem lufi shehem midirabonam v'chachmat chachamim gazru osam v'hirchiku osam. It's the chachma, the wisdom of the rabbis, which, decreed these various things and told us that we're not supposed to do them. In contrast, laws that are daraisa, that come from the Torah itself, are much harder for the human brain to comprehend. I mean, after all, the issue to eat pig is something that, comes from the mind of God, as it were, and to really understand it properly, we would need to be on some level that was closer to the divine wisdom. As mere human beings, as mere mortals, we have a hard time really being able to grasp the full depth of a din d'oraisa. In contrast, a din d'rabbanan, is the product of the mind of the rabbis. And, as great as the rabbis were, at the end of the day, they were mortal human beings. It's easier for us, relatively speaking, to understand a din d'rabbanan than it is for us to understand a din d'oraisa. Hence, says the Maral, that's why it's organized in the pasuk in the way in which it's organized. Again, obviously, Avraham Avinu kept the entire Torah, and, it doesn't make sense to say that he only kept the rabbanans, not the oraisas. That wouldn't make any sense whatsoever. However, in terms of ordering the components of Torah in the order in which Avraham Avinu was able to comprehend them, he was first able to come to a comprehension of the dinim de rabbanan, and only afterwards did he really come to a full comprehension, if at all, of the dinim de oraisa of the Torah laws. I should illustrate that with the idea that we just mentioned a few moments ago. Look, if you ask somebody, why don't we eat pork? So in the end of the day, we have a very hard answer, have a very hard time answering that question in any rational fashion. In the end of the day, the reason we don't eat pork is because God said don't eat pork. In other words, it's very hard to really come up with a definitive answer beyond that. However, if you ask somebody, granted that you're not supposed to cook meat and milk together, I don't exactly understand the reason for that either, but the Torah says you're not supposed to cook meat and milk together. Okay, so granted that fact, can you understand why the rabbis would say you shouldn't even serve milk and meat together, and you shouldn't even eat meat and milk together at the same meal, even when they're not cooked together? And can you understand why the rabbis would enforce a 6-hour separation from the time that you eat meat till the time that you have milk? Yeah, and others, once you tell me that you can't cook meat and milk together, I may not understand that, but at least I could understand what the rabbis were hoping to accomplish by putting all of these rabbinic prohibitions in place. Yeah, they do serve as a safeguard for the basic law. In other words, yeah, if you're going to feel comfortable serving meat and milk together, it is not a big jump to serve meat and milk together, to go from there to actually cooking meat and milk together. I understand that. Again, I don't understand the basic law. You know, why is it that I'm not allowed to cook meat and milk together? Okay, that I don't get. That's a din d'oraisa. But once you grant the existence of the din d'oraisa and, you know, the fact that it that's the Rosh Hashem, that that's God's will, understanding the fact that the rabbis would make senses around that is something that I can grasp. I can understand, you know, much more readily. It's an interesting perspective of the Maharal, and it may speak to other statements we find in Chazal that sometimes extol dinim d'rabbanan over dinim d'oraisa. Right? So, for instance, Rabbi Hartman quotes in the notes a passage from the Maral's Der Hagola, where he speaks about a Gemara in Erevin, Chazalas on the days, Ha'over al divrei sofrim chayiv misa. A person who violates the words of the rabbis is subject to the death penalty. Now, clearly it's not meant in a judicial fashion, right? Because we don't, you know, perhaps much to the chagrin of rabbis around the world, we don't take out people who violate the words of the rabbis. We don't take it outside and just, you know, put them to death. Again, maybe some of us would, you know, feel better if we did. Okay, but no, we don't do that. You know, we don't say literally, kol over adimer chacham chayiv misa. So what does it mean? It means that, okay, there's some kind of terrible, terrible divine punishment for a person who willingly violates the words of Chazal. Why are you focusing on the words of Chazal? Why not focus on the words of the Torah altogether? Kol over al divrei Torah chayiv misa. But why are you singling out divrei chachamim? So says the Der Hagola. Because, you know, there's at least the words of the chachamim I understand on some level. So there's a greater taina against the person. There's a greater claim against the person when you understand why it's wrong and you do it anyway, versus, you know, when you have a law that you really don't comprehend at all, just, you know, you do it because you're supposed to do it. Okay, when the person violates that, again, he's going to be held culpable, he's going to be held liable, but there isn't, you know, a complaint against him to the same degree as somebody who violates something that, you know, you should have known better, you should have understood, you know, where this law was coming from. Interesting. Okay. That's the fourth spice for today's shiur. Right? This idea of the ordering of the various components of the Torah that are in the pasuk. The next piece on the Maharal on this pasuk raises a very, very fundamental issue, which, again, as we'll see and we may know, many, many Mefarshim speak about. Hiksha HaRamban. The Ramban on Chumash asked the following kasha against this Rashi and by extension against the Mishnah and Kiddushin upon which this Rashi is based. V'halo Yaakov noso shvei achoyos sh'osra Torah. Here you're telling me Avram Avinu was so frum, he kept kol ha'tara kula. His grandson wasn't so frum, it seems. Yaakov Avinu married two sisters at the same time. Right? You're not supposed to be married to two sisters. So how do you justify Yaakov's violation of Torah law? By the way, maybe the easiest answer to that question is, who said anything about Yaakov Avinu? We're talking about Avram Avinu. Eikev HaShashon Avram V'Koli. Right? Didn't say anything about Yaakov Avinu. The truth is, the Taz, in his commentary, Divrei David, on Rashi, gives that as the simplest answer to the question. The Mishnah never talks about Yaakov Avinu kiyem kol ha'tara kula. Never says Yitzchak kiyem kol ha'tara kula. Avram Avinu kiyem kol ha'tara kula. Right? So what are you asking the questions from Yaakov? But obviously the Ramban's understanding is that once Avram Avinu was keeping kol ha'tara kula and he was, you know, passing on whatever he did and understood to his heirs, to Yitzchak, and then ultimately to Yaakov, it just makes sense that part of the legacy of Avraham Avinu is to keep kol ha'tara kula, and that's, you know, that should be true of Yitzchak, it should be true of Yaakov. So assuming that, how is it that Yaakov is married to Rachel and to Leah, two sisters? The Tirei HaRamban, the Ramban answers, Ki ha'avos lamdu ha'tara kula b'ruach ha'kodesh, k'moshi m'suru lamdu. Yes, indeed, the avos, Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov all learned Torah through the prophetic spirit the same way it's given to us. And they kept it, although they were not commanded to do so, but they kept it voluntarily. However, the Davka Eretz Yisrael, says the Ramban, when the Avos HaKadoshim keep the Torah in all of its, you know, fullness, only in Eretz Yisrael. Ki HaTorah hi mishpat Elokei HaOretz. Because the Torah is the law of the God of the land. The land over here, capital L, Eretz Yisrael. He's quoting a pasuk that phrase comes from Sefer Melachim, when it describes that after the 10 tribes, the Aseret HaShvatim, were sent into college by Sanhedrin, it describes how these new groups of people, so we now call today the Shomronim, came into Eretz Yisrael, and they did not adhere to the worship of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so they were attacked by lions, and they realized that the Mishpat Elokei HaAretz, the judgment of the God of the land, or the God of Eretz Yisrael, the Ribono Shel Olam, required that they adhere to monotheism while they were in Eretz Yisrael. So says the Ramban, the insistence that the commitment of the Avos to keep Kol HaTorah Kula was only in Eretz Yisrael, below the Chutzal HaAretz. The Yaakov Chutzal HaAretz Masach Be'Acharyos. When Yaakov Avinu married Rachel and Leah, as we know, was in Chutzal HaAretz, was outside of Eretz Yisrael. So Yaakov didn't feel bound by that requirement of keeping Kol HaTorah Kula outside of Eretz Yisrael. The Chen Avram does also. And you have the same kasha and the same carrots by Avram. Avram, the father of Moshe Rabbeinu, married Yocheved. The Torah says that Yocheved was Bas Levi. She was literally the daughter of Levi, which means that she was Amram's aunt. So a nephew was not allowed to marry his aunt according to Torah law. So how is it that Amram was allowed to be married to Yocheved? Answers to Ramban. Same thing. That all happens in Mitzrayim. So outside of Mitzrayim, the Avos, and the great people of Kol Yisrael before Matan Torah didn't feel any obligation to keep the laws of Torah, certainly not in their entirety. So that's when if you find that the Avos, the other great individuals prior to Matan Torah, seem to be doing things that are against Halacha, we'll give some other examples as we go on, the answer is Chutz La'aretz, Chutz La'aretz, Chutz La'aretz. This, by the way, if you recall from our Shiurim last year in Ibn Ezra, the Ramban is the one who's most famously associated with this Shita, but we pointed out last year that Ibn Ezra, in his very laconic and cryptic manner, makes a similar statement at the end of Sefer Dvarim, that outside of Eretz itself, pre-Matan Torah, there might have been a different standard in terms of what was acceptable and what was not acceptable. In other words, Ibn Ezra also has this idea. It's also worthwhile to point out that this idea from the Ramban fits into a more general perspective the Ramban has, which Rashi actually made into later on in Chumash, namely that the mitzvahs were given to us fundamentally to be observed in Eretz Yisrael. Right, the two people here in the audience who live in Eretz Yisrael full time will appreciate this, Ramban. The mitzvahs were given to us primarily to be observed in Eretz Yisrael, and to the extent to which we keep mitzvahs and chutz la'aretz, again, obviously we're obligated, but to the extent to which we keep mitzvahs and chutz la'aretz, on some conceptual level, it's practice for when we're in Eretz Yisrael, that there's something fundamentally different about Shmiras HaMitzvos and Chutz La'aretz versus Shmiras HaMitzvos and Eretz Yisrael. Now, for us, post-Matan Torah, that difference is more conceptual than anything else. But for the Avos, pre-Matan Torah, that difference was a very, very relevant difference, because they felt the obligation to keep mitzvos in Eretz Yisrael. They didn't feel that same obligation to keep mitzvos in Chutz La'aretz. So says the Ramban. And again, that's of one piece, these two positions of the Ramban about the centrality of Eretz Yisrael, the full Shmiras HaMitzvos really are, of one piece. It's the Ramban L'shitasa. Well, the Ramban actually addresses that. The Ramban says that's why Rachel died when she did. Right? In other words, you need to explain that a lot. So in other words, basically she passed away so that Yaakov wouldn't be in violation of being married to two sisters. once he made it back there, it's just, well, I think you have to assume that according to the Ramban, there were other factors, you know, involved in that cheshbon. But the Ramban says explicitly that, you know, the reason Rachel passed away when she did, and Ramban's understanding is that she passed away before they came back in Eretz Yisrael, which is an interesting understanding, because I think, you know, obviously the current political climate, not everyone agrees with the statement I'm about to make, but I think we generally assume that Kevin Rachel is in Eretz Yisrael, right? We don't assume that it's outside of Eretz Yisrael, and we will defend that, right? But the Ramban at least assumes that, you know, she died just outside of Eretz Yisrael, and the fact that she passed away at that juncture was because as Yaakov was coming back into Eretz Yisrael, it wouldn't be appropriate anymore for him to be married to two sisters. Right, so I don't know how you deal with that, but the Ramban does explicitly, you know, tie the timing of the death of Rachel Imenu into that discussion. What? Hold on. Okay, but who says that Beit Lechem is part of Eretz Yisrael? I'm saying that it's a funny Ramban in terms of that. Ramban assumes that she passed away outside of Eretz Yisrael, right? But again, maybe the Beit Lechem they're talking about is not the Beit Lechem. I don't know. Right, I totally hear you. I don't know how to answer. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. So I don't think even the Ramban assumes that every single Jew knew the entire Torah. You know, this was something that was passed on, you know, within the leadership as something that the elite knew, right? But the Hamon Am, the masses didn't. Plus, once the Torah was given at Har Sinai, it now made the Torah incumbent as an obligation upon everybody. Up until that point, it was being observed voluntarily by certain individuals, but this, you know, made it the possession and the obligation of the entire nation.
Yeah. When he found out the next morning he married the wrong sister,
yeah,
he decided to divorce the first one,
yeah,
to marry the second one. So Hashem made the first one have a whole bunch of children. So how can you divorce one wife? The other one has no children. So Hashem created this.
Well, one second, but when he married Rachel, Leah didn't have the kids yet. And he married Rachel a week later.
Yeah, but
right.
But
he didn't know that. You know, he figured. I mean, in other words, what he should have done. I mean, I guess, you know, you should have said, "Hey, you tricked me. I married Leah. Let me divorce Leah and let me marry Rachel." That should have been his.
You have to keep it from
Right. Okay. But Lamaisa, in the end of the day,
it was all planned by Hashem.
Yeah.
So Hashem could break his own law.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
He
still can't marry. Right. Right. Still stuck. Right. Right. Yeah. Well, that's not really advisable.
So the question is, look at Avraham Avinu. He had a wife. She taught him to take him.
Okay. Right.
And if he hadn't had, this is the city of Hamilton with our Muslim cousin today. So, and not only that, when after Sarah died, he took her back again and had more children.
Right.
So why did he have to do that? Well, when you have a people tell you, they do that, they have to do what they have opposite. You should do the same thing. But if a man in his 70s to 80s marries a young girl, what
does
the world think about
that?
Thank you.
Yeah. You're right.
So what was the question asked? Why did Abraham have to take more wives?
Well, it wasn't prohibited for him to take more than one wife. But again, according to Torah law, there's no problem taking more than one wife. Again, we have... What's that?
Same text we've been in the law.
No. Rabbeinu Gershom in the Middle Ages said, not prohibited according to rabbinic law, right? The society will, technically speaking, one is still married to have more than, still allowed to have more than one wife. Again, there is no country in the world where I think they will actually let you do that legally, right? But fundamentally speaking, if one is a Sfaradi, there is no even rabbinic prohibition against marrying more than one wife. Okay? Like the Gur Aryeh on the Ramban, I have a different way of resolving this issue as to why it is that Yaakov Avinu was allowed to marry two wives. But with Parshas Vayigash Mavur Ba'orach Ma'od, I'm going to talk about this in Parshas Vayigash at considerable length. It's always scary when the rabbi says I'm going to be talking about this at considerable length, because you figure even under normal circumstances, the rabbi talking about anything is going to be talking considerable length. So if he says I'm going to be married, I'm going to talk about it for a long time, he probably really means it. So indeed, in Parshas Vayigash, the Maral talks about this at considerable length. The discussion in Parshas Vayigash focuses on the following: when the Torah delineates the children, the grandchildren of Yaakov Avinu who go down to Mitzrayim, so it mentions that Shimon is married, that Shimon has a son named Shaul Ben Hakananus. Right? So that makes it sound like Shimon was married to a Canaanite woman. Wait a minute. These whole parshiyos we've been reading about how the Avos did whatever they could to make sure not to marry a Canaanite woman. So you're telling me that Shimon was married to a Canaanite woman after all of that? So comes Rashi and he says, no, Ben Hakananus doesn't really mean a Canaanite woman. It means Ben Dina. It really means Dina, Shimon's sister. Shenivolo Akanani. Right? Dina had been raised by Shem. Kishaharzu Eshem Lahoyso Dina Rosa Lovseis. Right? When the whole destruction of Shem took place, Dina didn't want to leave. Ashenishbala Shimon Shisaena. So Shimon swore that he would marry Dina. Indeed, he married Dina, his sister, and they had a son named Shaul. So comes the Maral, and he says, wait a minute, we went just from the frying pan into the fire, right? So you told me that Shimon was observant, and that's why he didn't marry a Canaanite woman. So he married instead his sister. And by the way, not just his half-sister, it's his whole sister. Right, and he was his sister from both parents, from Yaakov and from Leah. So you're not allowed to marry your sister. I mean, according to Torah law, it's pretty obvious that you're not allowed to marry your sister. But Maral speaks a little bit. He says, according to Ben Noach law, you would be allowed to marry your sister. Good. So we worked it out according to Ben Noach law, but according to Torah law, for sure you can't marry your sister. And if you're telling me that the Avos kept Kol HaTorah Kulo, so how is it possible that Shimon married his sister? So that's the launching pad for the discussion that the Maral has, that how do you deal with these circumstances where the Avos seem to be operating differently than the laws of the Torah. When we pick up after Ma'ariv, we'll try to put together, again, not quite with as much length as the Maral himself, but try to speak at least briefly about some of the solutions that the Maral poses to this problem. Right. So that's a discussion that some of the Rishonim have with regard to Yehuda marrying, a daughter of a Canaanite woman and the like. So you could have said that over here, right? But again, the Medrash Chazal that Rashi quotes from Bereishis Rabba assumes that we're talking about Dina, right? So once you assume that we're talking about Dina, how do you understand that Medrash in light of the idea that the Avos kept Kol HaTorah Kulo? The Ezra Shem after Ma'ariv will pick up and give some of the answers that the Maral gives in order to address this issue. Okay. Welcome to part two of the Shir of Maral Gur Aryeh and Parshas Toldos. Again, just to briefly summarize where we had left off. So the Maharal was talking about the statement in Parshas Toldos, Rashi, that Avraham Avinu was Mekayim Kol HaTorah Kulo, that Avraham Avinu kept the entire Torah, the Rashi's Dirabonam. The Ramban makes the assumption that what was true of Avraham Avinu was equally true of Yitzchak, Yaakov, and the Shvatim, Amram, you know, those the great leaders of the Jewish people. And he points out that we find instances where these great people clearly did not keep certain dinim of the Torah. The Ramban mentions two instances. One, that Yaakov married Rachel and Leah, two sisters. Two, that Amram married Yocheved, his aunt. And we find now that the Maharal, later on in Parshas Vayigash, mentions the third example, that again, according to a Medrash Chazal, brought by Rashi, that Shimon ben Yaakov, and Shimon, the one of the Shvatim, married Dina, his sister. So all three of these instances are cases where people violated Torah law. How do you deal with them? The Ramban has suggested one answer, that the Avos only kept Kalat Arakula and Eretz Yisrael, not in Kutzal Aretz. We should point out, however, that that is not going to work to resolve Shimon marrying Dina, because Shimon clearly marries Dina in Eretz Yisrael, not in Kutzal Aretz. So, you know, it's not clear how the Ramban would deal with that. Right, so the Maral in Parshas Vayigash points out that there is an opinion in Chazal that Bnei Noach are allowed to marry, brothers and sisters are allowed to marry. Right? Even from the same mother. In other words, even full brothers and sisters. Not everybody agrees to that, but there is such a shita, and the Maral says that in terms of, you know, the Bnei Noach aspect of things, L'chara that Medrash is taking the position that even a full brother and a full sister are allowed to marry one another. But that still leaves open the question, clearly, according to Torah law, they're not allowed to do that. So even if you could explain how it's okay from a Ben Noach's perspective, how do you explain in light of the idea that the Avos from the Kayan call us Arakula? There's a big Arichos, a very lengthy discussion of the Maral in Parshas Vayigash. I'm going to do my best to try to condense it a little bit and try to, you know, hit the highlights, if you will, but certainly would encourage everyone who can to look at the Maral inside. Again, it's in Perek Menvav, Pasuk Yud, you know, if you take a look at, if you're able to look at the Maral inside, it's certainly very, very elucidating. So, what I get that the Maral writes is as follows. Yesh Mepharshim, some explain, by Hartman in his notes points out that he doesn't know who this is, right, which I found a few times already, where the Maral will quote someone else, Yesh Mepharshim, but we don't have any independent record of who that, you know, mystery peerish happens to be. Kishani koda matan tara mila achar matan tara. Kichol ha'ovo tayu mekayim kol ha'tara kulo. Ach tzrichin hayu lekabu alemas ha'tara kikirim shnif kairu. When the Avos made the decision to accept kol ha'tara kulo, so they then acquired the status of gerim, of converts. And we find Chazal say that ger shnif kair ketinok shenola domi. That when someone converts to Judaism, they become like a newborn baby. What that means specifically is that any of the family relations which they had previously are no longer considered to be extant from a halachic point of view. Again, clearly someone is mekayer. Their biological parents are still their biological parents, but in other words, in a halachic sense, they're not considered to be related to those parents anymore, at least with regards to certain types of dinim. Right? So therefore, Pirush Lahach Milsa, Pirush Lahach Milsa Bilvad, L'inyan Kabbalah Hatara, L'shayach Bohem Inyan Achva, Shu Achim L'inyan Arayos, Shalom Noldu Bechil Hamisra Elohim Kiblu Me'aleim, Lahach Milsa Abu Kigayr Shain Arayos Bohem. Right? So the Maral writes a fascinating idea. If you look at all of these examples, they all involve illicit relations. And of all the quote-unquote violations of Torah that we've noted so far that the Avos have engaged in, Yaakov marrying two sisters, Shimon marrying his own sister, Amram marrying his aunt, he goes on to add Yehuda marrying his daughter-in-law. Right? Because they're all examples of violations of the laws of Arayos, you know, marrying close relatives, and says the Maharal, the whole concept of a close relative doesn't apply pre-Matan Torah to the others. Why? Because every individual within the family of the Avos who accepted Torah. Now again, they all did so voluntarily. In other words, Avram voluntarily chose to keep Kalat Torah Kula. Yitzchak voluntarily did it. No one was forced into it. So each one became like a Ger Shenifgaya, and therefore the family ties were broken. So of course the Avos were careful about Kalat Torah Kula, including not engaging in incest, but this wasn't incest. You know, halachically, none of these people were considered to be actually related to one another. So therefore, it's not shot that Yaakov married two sisters. He married two women who formally had been sisters. And yeah, you know, Avram married a woman who formally had been his aunt. Right? But all of those ties were broken when each of these people in turn was Makabel Kalat Torah Kula. Right. So it's interesting because on some level the Maral seems like he's trying to have his cake and eat it too. Right? Parenthetically, I once heard that, you know, if you think about it, the way we say the expression over here doesn't make any sense. To have your cake and eat it too. Of course you can have your cake and eat it too. First you have it, then you eat it. Apparently in England, the way they say the expression is you can't eat your cake and have it too, which actually makes sense. Right? So we do everything backwards, you know, we drive on a different side of the road, you know, so some of you reverse the expression also. But in England, again, as I understand it, they actually say you can't eat your cake and have it, so which actually doesn't make sense. So, what's that? Right, so there is an Isser Midrabanan, right, but the Isser Midrabanan may only apply, you know, once we have this whole parsha of Matan Torah. It could be that that Issa Derabbanan wouldn't apply, you know, in a day and age where just individuals are converting. Maybe that's a chiluk. To Yaakov's question, so the Maral, after making this paragraph, adds one line, which I didn't read to you. The line is that despite the fact that there wasn't a concept of being related to one another with regard to these issues, you know, namely the incestuous relationships, but the concept of family ties from from their own perspective was not done away with. So what does that mean? In other words, the Maral seems to be saying, yeah, they're not really related, but they sort of are related. So what does that mean? So again, in the notes, Rabbi Hartman explains as follows. You can't say that even with the concept of Gersh and Iskayer, that the Avos totally severed any relationships whatsoever to the people that biologically were their family members, because just consider the following. Avram Avinu passes away. Who inherits Avram Avinu? Oh, his son Yitzchak. Wait a minute. It's not his son Yitzchak. Right? It's this random person named Yitzchak who's not related to Avraham Avinu at all, right? According to the Maral. So, clearly that's not true. Clearly Yitzchak does inherit Avram. Clearly, the whole discussion of this week's Pascha about who's going to inherit Yitzchak Avinu, right? Is it going to be Esau? Is it going to be Yaakov? Who has the Bechorah? I mean, that whole discussion only makes sense if we assume that Yaakov and Esau are considered to be each potentially the heirs of Yitzchak.
That Eliezer might inherit it. So
you
didn't have to be your relative.
No, but that was before he had Yitzchak.
So
it was
still not relative.
No, so then Avram would die without any relatives, right? In other words, the then they see a racial tree is, you know, if I'm not going to have any children, so then who's going to be left to divide up the estate? It's going to be, the executor of the estate, Eliezer. So I'll be left without anybody, right? But once there's a Yitzchak, you know, there's no contemplation at any point that Eliezer would be Yorish Avram Avinu instead of Yitzchak, right? So Rabbi Hartman says that the whole concept of Yerusha clearly applies. So what does that mean? So it means that with regard to Arayos specifically, the idea of korva, of relationships, is severed, but it doesn't mean that with regard to other dinim of the Torah, Avram and Yitzchak are not considered to be related to one another. And presumably that's what the Maral would say as well with regard to Yehuda and Tamar. Again, that whole story only makes sense if we consider that they had some level of relationship with one another. So, again, the Maharal kind of is saying, you know, you can eat your cake and have it too. The Hainu, yes, with regard to the Isuri Arayos, you know, the relationships are no longer considered to be extant because Gershon is Tarekitina Shanola Domi, but that doesn't carry over to every issue in the Torah which would involve relationships. Well, the truth is, I mean, if you want to, you could take that very statement of the Chumash and flip it around. Lach lecha mibeis avicha. Such means sever your ties. No, I think the Maral might say, you know, now that you are engaging in lech lecha, you are abandoning beis avicha, and what's implicit in that is that he will no longer be avicha. And if he would stay there, I mean, maybe he at that point he had not accepted Kalat Arukula. I mean, that could be, right? In other words, you know, he was working towards monotheism, but it was still, you know, from that to becoming a fully Tariq Mitzvah Jew, you know, might have still been a work in progress. They can marry, right? They can marry both convert. See, the Rabbanu, we don't allow it because what are people going to say? You know, now that you've joined the Jewish people, you know, now all bets are off, you know, like, but that's why maybe it didn't quite apply pre-Matan Torah. And I think the Dinder Rabbanu wouldn't have applied Matan Torah because the Dinder Rabbanu is based on what are people going to say. If you start with the perspective that the Menoach are allowed to marry brother and sister, you know, so, okay, so people aren't going to say anything. It was Mutter before they converted, it was Mutter after they convert. Alright, so that's an idea which the Maral puts forward, which, again, you know, maybe the whole idea of relationships, it's not that the Avos weren't keeping Kol HaTara Kula, it's that the whole concept of relationships changed. Now, the Maral then is faced with the following conundrum, however. Okay, so now, the entire Jewish people comes to Har Sinai, and you know, they are considered as if they now converted, right? And in fact, we learn out all of the dinim of conversion from Maimon Har Sinai, from what happened over there. And we find in Chumash that after the Torah was revealed, it was traumatic for many of the Jewish people because they now gained all of these dinim of arayos, and being that they had not always been scrupulous about arayos beforehand, many of them had to break up their marriages. Right, so wait a minute. I thought you told me that Gershon is Karkis, you know, Shanola Dami, so then nobody should have to break up their marriage whatsoever, because nobody in Klal Yisrael, you know, the minute Matan Torah is over, so nobody's related to one another anymore, right? So the Maral says there's a difference between the entire community's acceptance of Torah versus the acceptance of individuals. When the entire community accepts Torah, the concept of Ketina Shanola Dami doesn't apply anymore. Why that is, you know, why that distinction should be there, is the focus of an extensive comment by Rabbi Hartman, where he quotes his Rebbe, Rav Huttner Zatzal. He, you know, Rav Huttner, as we know, was tremendously fond of who we could term, enamored of the Maharal. I mean, there's a reason that the Kolo Chaim Berlin is called Kolo Gorarie, right? You know, Rav Huttner loved the Maharal. So he quotes from Rav Huttner, he quotes the Chuchemza, again, attempts to explain what the Maharal was saying over here, but without really fully understanding, and again, I don't think we have time to really go into both of those explanations, but we should just be aware of the question and aware of the answer of the Maharal, that when the entire community of Klal Yisrael is Mechabal the Torah Mitzvahs at Har Sinai, the concept of Ketina Shanola Dami is no longer a relevant concept, again, for whatever reason. So that's the one idea that the Maral puts forward. The second idea the Maral puts forward in terms of answering this question, how could it be that the Avos kept Kala Tara Kula, and yet we find exceptions to the rule, is the following fascinating idea. There's a distinction, says the Maral, between Mitzvahs Aseh and Mitzvahs Losa Aseh. Right? Things you have to do and things that you are prohibited from doing. When the Avos kept Kala Tara Kula, generally speaking, he makes an exception for Avram Avinu. Clear that Avram Avinu kept both the Mitzvah Saseh and the Mitzvah Saseh, but other than Avram Avinu, the Avos kept Mitzvahs Aseh, they didn't necessarily keep Mitzvahs Lo Sa'aseh. And explains the Maharal as follows. There's a concept, you know, in Halacha of Eino Mitzvah Ve'Oseh, of doing a mitzvah even though you're not commanded. The whole concept of Eino Mitzvah Ve'Oseh, for which a person gets reward, says the Maharal, is only relevant for a mitzvah Aseh. It's not relevant for a mitzvah Lo Sa'aseh. Right, so he says, for instance, right, we find that a woman who's a Bas Kohen has no prohibition against going to funerals. About the Tami Lamesim, right? Kohen is not allowed to go to a funeral. A Kohenes, a Bas Kohen, is allowed to go to a funeral. Let's say, would it be of value if a Bas Kohen decided, no, I want to, you know, equality, right? You know, we want Shivyon Nashim, you know, we want the women to be on the same level as the men. The same way, you know, the same way my father doesn't go to funerals, I don't want to go to funerals either. It's interesting in all the discussions that there, you know, women's lives and the like, you know, that's one thing you never hear. You know, people may be clamoring to do all, women may be clamoring to do all different kinds of things, but I haven't yet heard that Kohanos, you know, are looking to get out of going to funerals, right? So would there be value in that? You know, if a Bas Kohen says, I don't want to go to funerals, is that a chumrah that makes sense on any level? So says the Maharal, of course not. It's interesting, how do you know, of course not? But he says, of course not, because the whole concept of an Eino Mitzvah Ve'Oseh getting reward only applies to Mitzvah Saseh. If a woman who's exempt from shaking lulav and esrog, besides, she wants to shake lulav and esrog, that's a praiseworthy thing, that's a wonderful thing. According to the Ashkenazim, she can make a bracha on that. But if a woman who's a Bas Kohen says, I want to take upon myself the restrictions incumbent upon a male Kohen and not go to funerals, that's silly. Because the only time that there's a kiyum ha-mitzvah, you know, for someone who is not obligated in that mitzvah, is for a mitzvah saseh, not for a mitzvah lo saseh. Before Matan Torah, the Avos were all in the status of eino mitzvah ve'osa. They were not commanded in mitzvahs. So it made sense for them to follow mitzvah saseh. By and in large, it did not make sense for them to follow mitzvah lo saseh. Right? So if you look again at all of these examples of where the Avos violated Torah law, they all relate to Isurei Arayos. Says the Maharal, the Isurim simply didn't apply to them. You know, they weren't commanded in the Isurim. And to voluntarily do a mitzvah lo sa'aseh that you're not commanded in just has no meaning or value whatsoever. The tired mitzvah shamati. Right. So the Maharal actually mentions that in his discussion. So he mentions. What's that?
Which would include most chapters.
Right. So he mentions it, if I'm not mistaken. He says the following, he gets into that a little bit. He says that even within the context of his distinction between Mrs. Ashe and Mrs. Lose, I'll say, hold on just 1 second. He actually makes the following comment, which again he has to unpack a little bit. I'm not sure that we have the time, you know, in this context to be able to do it. But he writes the follows. Yaakov knew there was, so to speak, a special dispensation for Yaakov to marry two sisters. This is a different idea that the Maharal seems to be throwing out there, right? Moshe Yoda Yaakov Hatorah Beruach Hakodesh Kach Hoyo Yodeh Sheyesh Lo Lisoh Shtei Achoyos. In other words, that because of the need to create the Shvatim, right, is a very similar idea to what he mentioned before, because of the idea that he knew that he had to create the Shvatim, he knew that he was allowed to marry two sisters, because that was the avenue the Ribbono Shel Olam had in mind for him to create the Shiv Tekah. And nowadays you can't just violate Torah law, because you know that Ruach HaKodesh, that you're destined to do X, Y, and Z. That's a very dangerous concept. But for Yaakov, it was a legitimate concept. And as such, so it was uniquely mutter to marry these two sisters. Had he decided in any other context to marry any two sisters, it would have been prohibited to him. And that's what that's what he means when he says to Esav, Tayyad Mitzvah Shamanti. Yeah. In other words, let's say a guy has to be Mechal Shabbos, one Shabbos, in order to save somebody's life. Would you call that a Mechal Shabbos? You would say he's a Shomer Shabbos. And there was an exception made in this particular case. So Yaakov Avinu had a special heter, if you will, to marry two sisters because of the need to create the Shvatim. Again, right, so that's the Ruach HaKodesh. Right, so maybe between, maybe after he married Leah, before he married Rachel, he was given, this divorce. Again, you have to read a lot into the Chumash in order to understand it, but he does address this idea of the tired Mr. Shomarty within Yaakov. How do you explain that within the context of his interpretation about Mitzvah Asay and Mitzvah Lo Sa'asay? So again, he ends up saying at the end that, at least in the case of Yaakov Avinu, not in the cases of Amram and Shimon and the like, within the case of Yaakov Avinu, we must understand that his marrying Rachel and Leah was a special dispensation granted him. Under any other circumstance, he wouldn't have violated even that lo sa'aseh. So in other words, this distinction between Mrs. Hasei and Mrs. Lo Sa'aseh is something that the Maral is saying for at least some of the biblical characters that we're discussing, but not necessarily for all of them. In other words, each person has his own connection to Torah or Mitzvahs, pre-Matan Torah. Hence, we find Avraham Avinu clearly is being described as keeping Mrs. Lo Sa'aseh. The Maral suggests that Yaakov Avinu in general kept Mrs. Lo Sa'aseh, but not everybody necessarily kept Mrs. Lo Sa'aseh. It's sort of dependent on the specific connection that you had to Torah or Mrs. Again, it's an idea I think he's fleshing out, but again, I just want to give Rashi Krok in there, and what, there's a lot more to discuss. Yeah, so he had Ruach HaKodesh, that's the Lashon of the Maral. Right, so actually, yeah, it does. So that's the Maral's point. The Nosein HaTorah said this, and the Nosein HaTorah said that. So God comes to you and says, thou shalt marry Rachel and Leah, because you'll produce the Yud Beis Shvatim from them. It's not so different than the Torah saying, yeah, normally you would never marry your sister-in-law, but there's this law called Yibum, where I'm setting aside the normal prohibition to marry your sister-in-law. Right, so it's a similar idea, to that. We'll pick up Ez Hashem next week with Parshas Vayetze. We'll see everybody there.